Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, Rodgers gets rogered at Rugby Park, ending Celtic's League Cup stranglehold. Can Stephen McLean, yippee-ki-yay, St Johnston into action? These are terrible. And we look ahead to another huge week in Europe for Scotland. Hello, I am your host, Andrew Slavin, and welcome to episode 4 of the latest instalment of the Scottish Football Show, a weekend where the League Cup has loaded up with shocks, but two former winners have already exited early doors. Joining me to dissect the weird goings-on in our weird and wonderful game, he is the Melbourne Melon, as I call him, and head creative at Melbourne FC, Finlay Marks, and he's printed, but he ain't vintage. It's forced, but it works. Does it? We'll have him anyway. It's Ewan Booth Robertson from The Herald. How are we, guys? All good?
I'm feeling really good. It's not often you get to see England chuck it in a World Cup final. So it's always a good weekend when that happens, especially when it's happening fairly locally to you as well.
Well, this is interesting because it throws me straight into the funnies that we regularly start with. Because Fitba Twatter? Fitba Patter posted a tweet, there you go, or an X, I suppose it is now, about Hibs getting through in the Europa Conference League playoffs to play Aston Villa, saying, imagine being an Aston Villa fan. You wait 13 years to play in Europe again to get sent to Leith. With a laughing face. And the thing is, like, it's brilliant because you flip, like, imagine waiting so long to get into Europe and then having to go to Birmingham.
Yeah. It's been an interesting European journey so far for Hibs so far this season, isn't it? Switzerland's not so bad, but you know, that Paddy Field mini festival that was going on in Andorra for that first leg that they lost, and then having to go to Birmingham, as you say, not an amazing start.
Another thing that really caught my eye was on Sunday when Kilmarnock were 1-0 up against Celtic. Did you see the videographer run on to the pitch when he thought that it was full-time whistle, like the desperation to get in to get the winning celebrations, but the game had still had like 5 minutes left to go?
Yeah, when I seen that, I thought it was inevitable that Celtic would equalise. And that guy would go viral on Twitter for being too keen, but luckily for him, obviously Celtic didn't equalise and he could probably get all the good shots. And I've seen on social media he's been lording that up, so fair play.
Oh, has he? I kind of had the weird kind of thought that maybe his mum and dad are Celtic fans and they're just in the pub at some Irish pub somewhere going, oh, son. Like, oh, that's my boy. Oh, no. What have you done?
The best bit about it, I think, was that we got a text on our little group, Andrew, from Laura. He was absolutely dying off for the Gilly videographer. And she was literally texting us. She was like, it's all in caps. I am dying for him. This is my absolute fear. And she was basically telling us that, like, literally every single game she's ever worked at, that's her biggest fear. Every game at Motherwell, she was terrified of being the first one to run onto the pitch. But yeah.
I remember I was doing, I think it was Liverpool against Hoffenheim. And it was like a Champions League game, like the first game for Liverpool. It might have been Europa League, actually. Can't remember anyway. It was a good while ago. And I was told to go on from Des Kelly to, like, go get Mohamed Salah. He's going to be the flash interview. You need to get him. So I had to run onto the pitch and I was just like, where is he? It's like, all right, he's the guy over there with the big hair. Ran over and I was like, can you do an interview for us for BT Sport? And he was just like, what now? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, right now. And it's like, can I not get changed? And I was like, just, it's such a weird, like, situation to be on the pitch at Anfield to try and get an interview. And this person has never seen you before. And you're like, I need an interview. Please do it. Please, or else my job is on the line. It's just so bizarre. But there you go. So many funnies. I really liked a video clip that's doing the rounds on Sunday night. Have you seen the Kilmarnock fan on holiday?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Oh, man. I mean, Finn, if you can put a wee clip of the audio, it is so good.
Yes! Hockey's all. Hockey's fucking all, man.
Won't they kill it? Not a baby, I'm
in your seat. Fucking yeah!
I'll put it here, but I'll also use it in a sting, I think, going forward for this season. Because it's absolutely brilliant. Like, this is, you love to see, like, that kind of instant gratification of not just that your team's won and that they've won a big game, it's that you immediately get to gloat in front of the other fans. But I thought it was like, it was, he does like this really almost kind of like Oscar worthy. Yeah, well, there's that.
Smashes it on the ground.
But what makes it even better is the dramatic exit from the scene. He kind of like exits stage right and he's just like, F he's all, and then just like carries on at the bar. He must have felt like 10 feet tall walking out of that bar. It's amazing.
I think that's a fact, isn't it? That obviously he supports a smaller club, and probably at the bar he was at, there'd be so many fans of Celtic, and yeah. You can only imagine the majority of them turned up probably ready to celebrate, and he was kind of going there with trepidation, and the fact that it's went the other way. It's when he walked off and you just said, you know, get it up, yous.
so good.
You couldn't even see him, but he's just obviously loving it. So fair play to the guy, fair play.
Aye, fair play.
I remember being in, I was telling you this story before, Andrew, as well. I remember being in a massive, massive beer hall in London Bridge, watching the Euros game between Iceland and England, that Iceland ended up winning, and being one of genuinely about four people in this massive beer hall of a couple of hundred people, obviously going for Iceland. And one of my pals beside me was kind of fearing for our lives a wee bit, being in this amongst, you know, this mess of England fans. They right weren't all like lads. Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. You're right in the heart of it. But to be fair, they were all fine. But there was then there was my mate beside me, Ewan, who was giving it big licks for both of the Iceland goals. And there was clearly one guy who was like the token Scot in the office of like a table that had been booked out for a whole department, who was absolutely living his best life around about a whole table of England supporting pals. But it's quite a weird feeling being like the supporting the underdog in a bar that's generally supported by one of the by the other side that you're kind of outnumbered by. But yeah, it's quite good fun.
I know that feeling, because similarly in, I think it was the 2006 World Cup when England played Sweden, I was on holiday, a lad's holiday, in Fuerteventura, which is basically littered with old people. It's not the lad's holiday destination you want to go to. We went to a bar called the Scotland Bar, and it was absolutely heaving with English fans. Fair enough. But we all turned up in like Sweden tops. A few of the lads turned out in Celtic tops. And I think England took the lead. And then when Sweden equalised, we went mental. Just like four lads. So the pub was packed with England fans. We were out, like, shoved out into the veranda looking through the windies. And so we celebrated the equaliser. They took the lead again, and one guy had to like maneuver through like this massive crowd of England fans. Like, excuse me, yeah, sure. And ran around, got through the double doors to us, stared at us for like about 2 seconds, like a little pause, and then went, ah! I watched them from start to finish, and I was like, credit to you, man. You got to give. If you're going to give, you got to take.
But then you would have got the last laugh, because did that game not end in a draw?
Absolutely. Totally cool.
It was Henrik Larsson got a last minute equaliser, so you should have run down the street after him.
I know. Henke. Bit of news. Really cool story actually coming out for from Argentina. So if you didn't know, the father of Argentine football was actually Scottish. It was a man called Alexander Watson Hutton, or Alejandro to his Argentine native friends. But he was a man who founded Argentine Football Association 130 years ago. He was born in the Gorbals area of Glasgow in 1853, orphaned at a young age, received his education in Edinburgh, got an MA in philosophy, and then took up teaching at George Watson's College. He went to Argentina, and basically in an homage to him, the new official match ball for the league is like a, have you seen it? It's like a Scotland saltire cross with like really cool decoration around it. Like, it's a bit of an homage towards Scotland and Argentina having a really cool connection. Like, we've just like invented football everywhere. It's not about England and it all coming home. I hate this nonsense.
It's not just the Scots. To be fair, like it's the Brits really were the ones that took it out globally. But you tend to find a lot of South American football, the roots of their football culture come from Brits that went out to South America. And in Brazil as well, I think Corinthians was started by a Scotsman. And the street outside the Corinthians Stadium is named after him as well. So, our reach in the game goes all the way back to its genesis in so many of these countries. And obviously, you know, you say there's a strong link between Argentina and Scotland. You know, that's something that we've been very keen to celebrate over a number of years, particularly 1986 and Diego Maradona's mazy runs and handballs. So, yeah, it's something we're delighted to celebrate in.
I have such a different view on this, but I won't go there because...
No, I'm keen to hear this. We don't have to put it in if you don't want to.
I hate Scottish fans celebrating England losing. I think it's so embarrassing. I think it's proper embarrassing. Like, genuinely.
How come?
No. So today I was watching the game and you've got Scottish fans on Twitter saying, ha, 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 get it up, England. We didn't even qualify. Like, I just think it's genuinely embarrassing. I'd rather celebrate success than someone else's failure. Yeah, I find it a bit cringe. But hey, that's my...
I think there's an element to that as well. I think for me, it more comes from... It's the sport. They're the biggest sporting rivals to Scotland.
Are we, though?
They're ours. We're not theirs, but...
Yeah, but are they rivals? Like, surely rivals compete to win things and...
No, not necessarily. I don't think so. I think it comes on all different levels because it's exactly the same. Like, if you... Who are England's biggest rivals internationally?
Germany, Argentina.
The Germans and the Argentines don't care. The Argentines maybe, but the Germans don't care. The English to them are a footnote in football. They don't care about that rivalry at all. It's not one to them.
We're probably a footnote to the English.
Well, we are, but it's not necessarily how rivalries work, though. Like, if you look at Everton's a really good example as well. Who are the one team that Everton want to beat every season? Liverpool. Who are the one team that Liverpool want to beat every season? It's not Everton. It's Man United. It's the way these rivalries work.
Yeah, I just I've got a different view. I support Thistle, and I don't see Rangers and Celtic as our rivals because they're not rivals.
No, I think that's slightly different, but I think in sporting terms as well. Maybe again, it was slightly more potent as well for this Women's World Cup that was here, because like my wife's Australian, I've been supporting the Australian national team, and England knocked Australia out in the semi-finals, so I was kind of hoping that they wouldn't go on and win it. But
I just think it's a bit cringe when we celebrate and we can't even get there.
That there's that too.
Here's an analogy, right? You and your biggest rival work for a company, okay? Say it's a For point's sake, it's a kitchen. Mm-hmm. You work as the KP, so the kitchen porter. Your rival works as the sous chef. Okay? The sous chef goes for the job as the head chef, but he doesn't get the job at the last minute. But you're laughing at him because he's still the head chef while you're the KP. And that is a brilliant analogy.
If you say so, Ewan.
But that comes down to how big the feud is, or your personal feelings of sentiment, your personal sentiment towards the person. But I think if you were, just because you're not also a sous chef doesn't not give you the right to feel glad that somebody you don't like or your rival hasn't succeeded. But
yeah, I think it does. I think if you can't if you can't qualify for something, then you can't really laugh at another team's misfortune.
So does that mean, like, to use that same analogy then, what you're talking about is pecking order? Like, so if you were a local politician and, you know, something funny or bad happened to somebody who's like a Tory prime minister or a rival to a rival party that you're in, that doesn't give you the opportunity to gloat?
I think it does. You're not on this, if you're on the same level. Scotland can't qualify. They get pumped off Republic of Ireland, who have a worse team than us, yet all the Scotland fans are laughing at England for getting to the final. Do you know what I mean? It baffles me.
Yeah, I just don't think they have to be symbiotic. I think you can be angry at your own team's dismal performance, but also laugh when your rivals don't win. I think. But is that not part of the joy of being a sports fan, though?
No, like, I don't think it is.
Okay.
if you asked the majority of Scotland fans, right, if they'd rather Scotland got to the World Cup or England got beaten in the final, what do you think they say?
Oh, but that's because that's directly involving your team. That's a totally different thing.
What do you think the answer would be?
Well, it'd be Scotland getting to a World Cup final.
No, that's rubbish.
No, not having it.
I tell you what, we need to put this out to we'll put this out to a poll on Twitter. Would you rather England lost a World Cup final or Scotland got to a, Is that the question? Got to a World Cup final?
Well, Scotland got to the final, so got to the tournament.
Ah, no, that's different.
Season in the cup competitions, but Killian done it in the first time of asking.
Let's talk the League Cup, guys, because the holders Celtic ended up succumbing to first cup defeat, in fact, under Brendan Rodgers. Yeah, a bit of a mad game this. He seemed to blame the pitch, although he didn't want to kind of throw any excuses towards this one, Finn, but once again, it seems to be Kilmarnock look like a completely transformed team. You know, I just wonder if McInnes isn't missing Tony Docherty after all. It seems like he's left and this whole Kilmarnock team is doing wonderfully at the moment. Bear in mind, they obviously beat Rangers in the opening day of the season. And there you go, they've beaten the other giants from Glasgow.
What a start to the season for Kilmarnock. Like, you know, they've beaten both halves of the Old Firm and they got a point at Tynecastle as well. You know, that's on paper, that's a pretty grim start to the season, and they've come out of it pretty much unscathed. So it's impressive. I think the recruitment that Derek McInnes has done this summer has been quite impressive. I think it was always going to be tricky, their first season back up in the Premier League last year, but they were able to kind of like steady the ship, and it looks like they've built that platform now to go on. I think the thing about the pitch in Kilmarnock is it's not a great advert for the game. I don't think anybody enjoys it, but it's been there for a long time now. You no matter what level of club you are, you can't use it as an excuse. It's not the only one in the country. Teams play on it all the time. You need to figure out a way to play around it and play through it. It's funny that it generally always seems to be a problem, you know, if a bigger team goes there and doesn't get a result. But it's just something we have to live with. So you can't, and it wasn't the reason for the defeat, just as it wasn't the reason for Rangers losing the match a fortnight ago. It will be interesting to see, I think, what happens under Rodgers this season, because he's inherited, we talked about this at the start of the season, he's inherited an incredible squad. He feels he's maybe got slightly unfinished business there. I just don't think there's that same momentum. I don't think there can be the same momentum that was there under Postecoglou, where they were just firing in all cylinders. They were a different beast. But I think the fact that, you know, again, both Rangers and Celtic have lost to a team like Kilmarnock, with the greatest of respect, but given the meagre resources they've got to even other teams in the division, it gives a lot of hope for the season, I think, that it's not just going to be potentially dominated by the Old Firm, especially in the cup competitions, which is always going to be the best chance for teams outside of Rangers and Celtic to have a chance at winning silverware.
Yeah, obviously Rangers are through because they got rid of Greenock Morton, but the ties for the quarterfinals are quite interesting. Kilmarnock will play Hearts. Rangers play Livingston at Ibrox. Livingston have never won at Ibrox. They could 22 or 23 appearances there. Ross County will go through to play Aberdeen. I think they've got extra time against the Ionians. Then it's Hibs against St Mirren. So it's one of these times that, you know, one of Celtic and Rangers, when they leave this competition, it kind of galvanises all the clubs around them, doesn't it, Ewan? Because it makes it really exciting for kind of the average football fan up the road as well.
Yeah, I'll touch on the pitch quickly on Kilmarnock, because it's never an excuse for losing. And it shouldn't be the reason, but it's definitely a factor.
There was many other factors for Celtic as well.
Of course there was, but I think a lot of spotlight maybe shines on broadcasters sometimes about their inability to sell Scottish football. But I mean, there's been two games at Rugby Park this season and they've both been dreadful to watch. And the pitch is a factor. There's no point in getting away from it. I think sometimes the broadcasters can get too much stick where people maybe don't look closer to home. And I think, you know, the pitches aren't good. For me, if you're a club outside the Old Firm, why doesn't every club just get a plastic pitch? Because it does give them a better chance of winning games. You've seen that at the start of the season. I'm a massive no to plastic pitches. I think they're terrible.
Well, it's one thing you know down in England, and I'm sure there are other clubs in Scotland as well, but there's a financial benefit to it when you lease it out to the local, you know, community and stuff like that. And that's where it's a benefit. But I take your point, when it's top flight football, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Listen, the financial benefits to clubs below the top flight, I can completely understand it. And the Kilmarnock and Livingston, they can rent their pitch out through the week, they can train on it, etc. But
Queen of the South as well.
At the top flight of Scottish football, it shouldn't be allowed. It's as simple as that.
Maybe it's a topic, Finn, we'll bring up in future weeks and talk about, you know, the future of the way that grass pitches should be introduced back into the game, or if it is, if there is ways to make it better. Because I remember, the previous Livingston manager, was it
Gary Holt?
Gary Holt, sorry, thanks, Ewan. He was so kind of in full praise of plastic pitches. Or plastic pitches is probably the wrong phrase.
Artificial.
As well. Artificial, there you go.
Listen, I can understand why clubs have them in Scottish football. Money's tight, especially lower down the pyramid. I can completely understand it from a financial viewpoint. But I think when you've got, two of the first, I want to say three or four televised domestic games of the season on that surface, and they're not good to watch. Yeah, no.
One team that wasn't playing over the weekend were St Johnstone, because they had an absolute howler of a League Cup group campaign. But we wanted to find out what was going on behind the scenes and if fans are actually enjoying things at the moment. Suspecting the answer is no.
Chaos, euphoria in the away stands, blue limbs everywhere.
Less than 3 years ago, St Johnstone fans were celebrating a Scottish Cup double under Callum Davidson, but the fallout has been a difficult one for Saints fans. It got so bad, they were left with no option but to end their time with Davidson, and in May appointed his assistant and former striker, Stephen McLean, as his successor. It's been a difficult start to life under McLean. Winless in their new league campaign adds to the dismal display in the League Cup, where they lost to Stirling, Ayr and Stenhouse Muir. That in turn meant they did not play over the weekend, so something McLean may be thankful of, but he will try to ready his side for their next game against Dundee at the weekend. We want to get a little bit of an insight as to what fans are thinking, so I'm delighted to say that Saints fan Greg Browning, he's a football analyst, betting analyst, I should say, and podcaster, joins us now. So, Greg, how are you? You know, what's your mood right now? Is it sad? Are you a little hopeful? Or is it just a little bit difficult to see how things are going to be right now? Because if you look at it on paper, it is dismal. It's hard for media guys like us to know, really.
I think it's a combination of all those things. There's probably a bit of anger in there as well about how things have come to be over the last 2 to 3 seasons. Especially given where we were, as you say, leading Galatasaray in Turkey 1-0 just over 2 years ago. And look at us now, losing at home to Stirling Albion. No disrespect to Stirling Albion, but that should be happening, especially 4-0. So also a bit of realism as well. I think fans knew over the last couple of seasons that we were headed in a pretty grim direction due to lots of factors and not just one reason behind this. But I think we're in for a long, tough and really horrible season. And we're only into mid-August and already apathy is setting in. We didn't play this weekend, which is great. We didn't get beat this weekend, which is good. First time probably since Alloa. We've lost 4 games since then.
Right.
But yeah, it's been a pretty dismal start. And I don't have high hopes at all for the rest of the season. A lot needs to happen between now and then. And I guess for me, the biggest issue for me is I think a lot of the other teams in the league in that bottom six all look pretty thaw and steady.
Has part of the problem potentially been on a recruitment side? Because, I mean, there have been a couple of mainstays of the side, and especially that cup winning, the double team, the likes of Ali Crawford, Jason Kerr, Leven Hugh, where for a team like St Johnstone, you know, terrific, terrific players, and they were so integral to the way that team played. Is there a bit of an aspect of that they've kind of struggled to replace those players once they've gone out the door?
Yeah, I guess there's two things. First of all, you're absolutely right. That's the biggest issue we've had. It's not just this season, last season, the season before. Recruitment's been an issue at the club. I'm talking 5, 6, 7 years potentially. Tommy Wright highlighted it about 4 years ago that we need to put in place a proper recruitment structure to support the club moving forward. It'll pay for itself. I think Jim Goodwin talked about at Aberdeen and Dundee United that they need to have that in place, and it will pay for itself. Get the recruitment right, then you'll sell players on and make money. But for us, we've been run like an army team behind the scenes now for seasons and seasons now, and it's really now coming to bite us back on the arse, basically. And I think for Steve Brown, the Browns get a lot of credit for obvious reasons. They've been absolutely sensational for the football club over the last 30 years, Jeff, and obviously over the last 10 or so years, his son Steve. But I think Steve, as the chairman until this year, till he left, I think the buck stops with him for me around recruitment. Mm. A lot of the things in the background haven't been put in place, and you have to feel for Stephen McLean at the moment. He's been given a bit of a really raw deal at the moment.
It's you can't refuse the job either for Stephen. You know, it's a great gig. Great gig. Like, and the fans are fantastic. But no matter what, like, you can still look back and say a couple of years ago they were cup double winners. You know what I mean? Like, it's unreal. But what do you think was the success of that? And why haven't they replicated that? Is it, I know we've just talked about recruitment, but, you know, why hasn't the success of that bred more success?
Well, that's the thing. We were in a position of strength. Just won a cup double, something that probably won't happen again outside the Old Firm, to be fair, especially in our lifetime. And we should have been pushing on then and improving and still keeping in top six, pushing for Europe. At the start of the podcast, you mentioned about Ali McCann and Jason Kerr, two pivotal players for us. And we got £2 million for them both. I know Jason Kerr's contract was running down, but I still have a real gripe about the Ali McCann deal. Last minute, end of the month, £1.2 million with add-ons, potentially. And we never replaced those two players. And ever since then, it's just been downhill. We struggled to stay up that season. We had to beat Inverness in a playoff. And last season, we were really fortunate. There was a couple of teams below us in the league, i.e. Dundee, one of them, who really struggled. But this season, though, I don't see there being many clubs below us, if any, come May.
It's kind of an interesting thing that I wanted to ask you about. I've got a couple of friends who are fans of teams like St Mirren, Motherwell, Kilmarnock, and they kind of have this feeling a lot of the time where they maybe it's a bit of the nihilism that comes in just with being a football fan and a Scottish football fan, where they're always just like, just safety first, I just want to survive. And I'm like, it's difficult because, you know, especially for teams like St Mirren, or I would say St Johnson, you know, they've been mainstays of the top flight for about 15 years. But then, you know, from slightly older generations, that might not have been the case. And there's always just this residual fear that, like, well, we've kind of outstayed our welcome and we're due a season to go down and all of this kind of stuff. But is that potentially part of the mentality that's there in the background, maybe, for St John's fans or people at the club?
I think across the board, you'll have a percentage of fans who were at Muirton Park in the 1980s in front of 300 fans against East Stirling. You've then got another section of fans who've only known success. They've known three trophies, multiple trips in Europe, top six finishes, as you say, 15 seasons in the top flight. Yeah. And I'm very much part of that crew, as in, I don't believe we should just be existing in the league. Let's be honest, it's not a great league, really, but there's probably seven or eight sides you could probably put a bit of paper over. There's not much between them. And I think after that double cup win, we should be looking to push on and really looking to capture some really good players as a good place to go, play your football and get a move down south. But that just hasn't happened.
It's one of the things that I've always found quite intriguing, especially because I've got family that come from Perthshire and Tayside, and it's a stunning part of the country. You're very close to Edinburgh and Glasgow, the other big cities, or Aberdeen if you want to go up the way. Like, it's a beautiful part of the country. Perth in particular, like, is a beautiful place. Why do you think there might be a problem in attracting a certain level of player to a club like St Johnston?
Both is at the same time. Mula, Cheddar, De Niro.
So, as you know, obviously, we don't tend to pay the biggest wages. And obviously, over the years, you've seen sides like Gretna, Livingston, Dundee all really struggle, go down the leagues because they've been playing over inflated wages. And that's something that we've never, ever done, ever, or ever will do. And obviously, Steve Brown and Jeff have always said they won't put the club at risk by paying overinflated wages. And I think that's got something to do with it. That's a big, big part of it. That we're not. How often do you see us go for a player that lose out to Kilmarnock or a Motherwell or one of those other clubs? Kind of
which
small
could be a positive club. As well, Greg, you know, given the circumstances of the last few years too, you know.
But I think recently, though, when you look at recruitment, Callum Davidson was given a bit of a war chest in St Johnstone terms. He was given money to improve the side, to kick us on after the cup win. And to be honest, when you look at the players that were signed and the money that was spent, big money for us.
Who were some of the failures? Because I don't really remember so much. Like who? Because you say war chest in St Johnstone, you're like, really?
We had Vertanen, the Finnish player, spent money on. Theo Bear was probably one of the main ones.
Oh, yeah.
Canada. Mm. I'm not sure what the fee for him was, but 80 grand. We usually get fee signings, usually, but to spend £80,000 on a player, and we've obviously let him leave to Motherwell, and he's scored in his debut.
Yeah.
But there was lots of recruitment over the last couple of seasons that just never landed. And when you look at other sides, they often tend to get the recruitment right. Like, how many times have Motherwell signed a striker over the last 15, 20 years? And it's bagged them 25 goals or 20 goals and got a move down south. There's lots of them. We've never managed to do that. So that's one of the challenges, I think. And obviously, Callum Davidson suffered off the back of that. 2 seasons in charge. But ultimately, enough was enough. Fans gave him plenty of time, I think, Callum Davidson. Mm-hmm. And Maka had one job, really. To come in and keep us up. And that's what he did. And that's exactly why he was given the job. And I don't think anyone was upset by that. I think it was a sensible option. Obviously, the cheaper option as well. And I think everyone wished them the best. And obviously, this season, it's been a nightmare. He is saying all the right things. Mm-hmm. He is saying all the things that fans know and want to hear. But talking about it's only going to get you so far. And as the weeks go on, what you tend to find is people are starting to get a little bit fed up with all the talk when you see the performances on the pitch.
We picked up on it, I think it was last week actually. He didn't throw his players under the bus, but he just said the performance was kind of disgraceful. And you can say that 1 week and you can get the support of the fans. But if he says it again, if you're hearing repetition from your manager, it just becomes boring. You don't want to hear any more of it. You want to hear improvement or at least the improvement's going to be coming round the corner. I know I don't want to put you in the bad scopes of St Johnstone fans here, but what are your thoughts about going forward under Stephen McLean? Do you think there could be some, you know, shoots of hope for St Johnstone fans?
Well, there's still time left in the transfer window. Obviously, last season we had an over-bloated squad, far too many players. It's the biggest squad we've had in our history. Like 24, 25, 26 players is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Hemorrhaging money on players who have never even been on the bench. Mm. So that doesn't help. But for me, realistically, I have us finishing in the bottom two. 100% in the bottom two.
We're only in August.
We're only in August. So I don't have any hope at all, really. The players we're bringing in, we have to pray and hope that 4 or 5 of them click and really improve the squad. But from what I've seen so far, we're bringing in players that haven't got much first team experience. We're even boys that have played 200, 150 matches at the ages of 25, 26, 27. We're bringing in guys at 19, 20, 21.
Yeah, there's no Ali McCanns or Jason Kerr's coming through again at the moment. That's the concern. You know, that lifeblood, that youth blood that St Johnstone were breeding, it seems to be dissipating.
And the players that have been playing this season so far, and obviously, don't get me wrong, due to injuries, our injury list this season has been horrendous. And I don't think many clubs could cope with that. But the young players that have come through, in my opinion, simply aren't good enough. These are guys that have been out on loan over the last few seasons in League One, and they're asking to do a job in the Premiership. There's a massive gulf in quality there for me. And I don't think there's many, if any, of the younger players who are good enough. And I think as well, we've seen a massive dip in form in some of our more senior players. Yes, we always had real leaders on the side. Stephen Anderson, Fraser Knight, Chrissy Miller, Dave Mackay, Jason Kerr. But now, we don't have that leadership qualities on the side, and it's clear to show come a Saturday. Yeah.
Regrets? No, it's good laugh on it. So.
I didn't find it funny.
Right, well, it was an excellent European campaign so far for the likes of Hibs and Hearts. It's been amazing to see Scottish teams do so well in Europe. I know it's just the qualifiers, but the fact that we've got so many teams through to the playoffs, we've got Rangers obviously in the Champions League playoffs, we've got Aberdeen who could get through to the Europa League, but they're guaranteed at least the conference. But for Hibs and Hearts to get through the ties, Rosenborg and Luzerne, was just awesome to watch, obviously on the same night. But the fact of the matter is, if we start things off, guys, Rangers, PSV, Finn, it's quite a mouthwatering tie. It's one that's kind of a repeat of last season as well.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll have the same outcome as last season. I don't think many of the performances merit much optimism going into it, especially the fact that PSV kind of feel aggrieved that they should have got through over two legs last year. They feel a bit like they couldn't believe that they didn't get through in those ties. I think Rangers will have to pull a colossal rabbit out of a very big hat in order to make the group stage. But I think there's a collective feeling as well amongst Rangers fans that it might not be the worst thing if they don't make it into the Champions League group stage. Money aside, which is always the biggest thing, it's that's the biggest reason they want to be there. But I think in terms of a level of competition, Europa League is probably more where it's at this season.
The thing that Rangers fans can hold on to, though, is that the first leg is obviously at home and the second leg is at PSV, which is exactly the same as last season too. So, you know, there's nobody expected Rangers to get through last season either.
Yeah,
so
I don't hold out much hope for them.
Aberdeen also face familiar opposition, we should say. They've been drawn against BK Hacken, which I've now renamed as Burger King. Burger King Haken of Sweden. They met in the Conference League qualifiers 2 years ago, which was a 5-1 win that ended at Pittodrie. I don't know what you think of this one, Ewan. Do you fancy their chances?
They've got to win. I think they're favourites over both legs, and they should be looking to win at that game. They should be a club who have ambitions to be in the Europa League group stages. It's better than being in the Conference League, which is obviously secured anyway, but you'd want a Scottish club in the Europa League group stages. I think Aberdeen are the favourites to win the tie, and they've not had a great start to the season, but I think there's reasons behind that with players that have been out injured and a little bit of changes in the squad. They've got problems at centre-half, which are well documented, but I think Aberdeen should win this tie, and I think if they don't, then it'd be hugely disappointing.
And what about Hibs, Ewan? I mean, it was an amazing result for Hibs in Europe so far. They've done really well. I mean, Lee Johnson is a very attack-minded coach, but coming up against Aston Villa, all the headlines will be on John McGinn. But you have to think of the real kind of, you know, how are they going to win? It's unlikely, really.
Yeah, they're not going to win.
Deflated me already, pal.
There's no reason for optimism. They're not going to beat Aston Villa over two legs, right? But they should just enjoy it. Enjoy the game. I mean,
enjoy Birmingham.
The amount of times that you buy shares in John McGinn's name, the amount of times he'll be mentioned.
It'll be embarrassing, won't it?
I mean, Hibs aren't going to beat Aston Villa. If they do, I'll eat my hat. It's not going to happen.
Do you wear hats, Ewan?
I had a hat on just before, so I had to take it off. but there's no chance. Like, it's just a great occasion when Scottish teams play English teams. I love it personally.
Yeah. Do you know what I hate, though? I hate the whole Battle of Britain phrase that's always thrown around it, because it's not a battle of a Battle of Britain is when the two champions face off. Like, do you know what I mean? Like the two best teams. So it's not a Battle of Britain. This is like a Battle of Tesco.
Well, actually, I mean, Hibs have done fantastic to reach this stage. Again, I didn't expect them to progress in the last leg. And, you know, Lee Johnson is a guy who divides opinion. Personally, as a journalist, I absolutely love the guy.
Oh,
he's David Brent. You know, he's brilliant. He's so good for a line. If you're Hibs fans, you might think differently, which would be understandable. But from a personal point of view, he brings so much just colour to Scottish football. The line last week about Will Fish and being chased by a lion, I mean, like, he's just doing all these things all the time. Like, he's box office. The guy's box office. And he's done well. Like, I watched the first leg and he pretty much went 4-2-4. You know, he played Boyle and Juhan wide and went for it. And that's what you want to see. I mean, have a go.
And just quickly, Finn, the Jambos, Hearts had an unreal night an unreal night at Tynecastle.
Shanklin there, Devlin again, opens up, Devlin shot, yes! Devlin! Yes! Cammy Devlin scored again! Oh, magnificent feats at Tynecastle! Park to Midlothian 3, Rosenborg 1, and it's 4-3 on aggregate! And for the first time in the tie, the men have run their head!
We had Laurie Dunsire on, who commentates for Hearts, and he was, you know, on the fence a little bit of how things could be, because I did say that Tynecastle can be a total cauldron, a great noise, a great atmosphere, and it totally worked for them. It was amazing to see them turn that tie around against Rosenborg at home. But this is a totally different team that they're going to face now, Palk Salonika. I don't know what you know about them. Do you know anything?
Well, I mean, they're one of the bigger teams in Greece, always have been. They've been there or thereabouts in European competition for a long time. It's a huge ask. I mean, you're speaking of cauldrons, like Pauk is a hell of an atmosphere to go into. My heart says there could be a chance for five Scottish teams in Europe. I think my head says it'll just be the three that are already guaranteed the group stage football. And I think Rangers will be in the Europa League, and I think Aberdeen will be in the Conference League. The closest to being favourites in any tie is Aberdeen Haken. But still, I don't know if they'll have enough over two legs. Haken are not the same team they played a couple of years ago. They're a better side. There was an interesting graphic that was on Twitter, on X somewhere, and it showed the disparity between, you know, in terms of the ELO rating of the club, and all of the Scottish teams are below their opponents. Even Aberdeen, in terms of their ELO rating, are below Haken. The biggest disparity, obviously, is between Aston Villa and Hibs, which is just, you know, it's literally almost off the scale. Aston Villa is so far above any of the other teams, including PSV or Rangers. But I don't hold out a huge amount of hope. But then I think there's reason to have optimism, because I think if you look at like the Hibs Lucerne game, for example, it wasn't just the result. The result was great, but the performance was superb. And it's been a long time since we've seen, I think, that level of performance by teams probably outside of Rangers and Celtic on a European stage. And long may that continue. I really hope that that's now the benchmark of what we're expecting our teams to play like and get results like in Europe. But I don't know if it'll happen in these rounds, sadly.
I'm glad at this stage of the season we're not talking about another, you know, disastrous European campaign for the, you know, the other clubs that are fighting to get into the, not just the playoffs, but to get promoted into these, you know, luxurious group stages.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahani, right foot. Whipshot. Oh, jeezy peeps, man.
Elsewhere in the Championship, there was only one game over the weekend. Queen's Park, what is it? 100% record, shall we say. Because that's what it is, beating Arbroath 1-0. Arbroath, the opposite 100% record of losing all of their games. Interestingly, in League One, though, I don't know if you guys saw, a historic meeting between the mighty Queen of the South and their little neighbours, Annan Athletic, playing in the first competitive league match, or first competitive game, I should say, ever. And Queen's battered them. Yeah, absolute class. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much so.
It's quite strange they've not met in the, whatever it's called, Cup.
Yeah, I know.
I still call it the Tullinax Tea Cake Cup, but I mean, it's weird they've not met in that tournament yet.
But still, you know, it's nice to see Annan up there. I don't think Queens probably ever thought they'd be in the same league as Annan. But really interesting thing about the game, though, was that Queen of the South's former manager, Willie Gibson, actually plays for Annan now. He helped them get promoted, but he was playing fullback for them, and his son still plays for Queens. So his son came on and played against his dad.
That's pretty cool.
So that is pretty cool, man. I think that's pretty cool, especially that you beat your dad professionally. I know Annan are like part-time, and you know there's only like three teams that are full-time in League One, but still, oh man, if my son beat me professionally at football, I don't know if I could live that one down. Right, that's it for another week. We'll be back next week But my thanks go to Greg, the St Johnston fan, who has no hope of St Johnston fans for this season. Ewan, cheers for joining us again. It's good to have you back for this season. Finn, you were exceptional as usual. Love that melon ball. And if you do enjoy Finn's melon ball, you can see us weekly on YouTube. We've got TikTok, we've got Facebook, we've got kind of every social media covered this season. But it's time to go and listen to something else now. So, cheerio.